Well, Psalm 127, if you have your Bible, Psalm 127. We'll try to teach you some things this morning. I want to talk to you about the Christian home, and especially the area of how, I'd say this, influencing our kids to turn out right for the Lord. But just influencing our children to turn out right for the Lord. And this chapter gives us a wonderful springboard into it, and really gives us the answer right off the bat. If I read the first three words and stopped, that could be the message in the Sunday school lesson for today. Look at the first three words. Accept the Lord. Accept the Lord. And there it is right there. Accept the Lord. Because, let me say this, no one has all the answers to this thing of rearing children. I claim the verse in the Bible, my son is a lunatic. I have five sons. Okay, they're all lunatics, I'm telling you. Now, they're all serving the Lord, but they're lunatics. And but, you know, nobody has all the answers. And the million-dollar question is how to get our kids to turn out right, you know. And there's no set formula. I'll say this. There's no one set book. I don't care who wrote it that can tell you all. You know, it may have worked for him, but it may not apply to your kids. And that type of thing, other than the book. Now, the book has the answer, okay? It's relevant for us today. And but there's no one set book. But however, let me say this. Don't ever stop reading books. You ought to read and get as much as you can and apply the principles, especially based on the Word of God, but apply some of the principles and philosophies that people give from there, but you can't just depend on this one author or this one book, because there is no set formula other than the Word of God. But you ought to read as much as you can. You ought to go to couples retreats. You ought to you know, seek as many answers as you can through counsel and other people who had children that are grown. I remember going to Ron Kendall. He's at he's the one that bought Indian Creek Baptist Camp and gave it to the church when his kids were already grown, all serving the Lord. I went to him and said, Brother Ron, you know, can you help me with this? And I would sit down with him for a couple of hours and sought his counsel and advice on that. So that's a wonderful thing to do there. And but nobody has all the answers. But, and by the way, let me say this. Don't put your kid in your box. In other words, you've got a goal for them, and you know, it's almost like you're going to dictate the will of God for them. Now, you ought to guide them, and you ought to have dreams and aspirations and plans for your children, but don't just live your life through your kid. Let God live His life through your kid, okay? And let's pray together, and we'll jump in here. Father, thank you for today. Thank you for your goodness to us. I pray that you bless us as we look through your Word. And just some practical thoughts about children. And there again, I just said, nobody has all the answers. So I'm standing up here. I don't have all the answers. But I'm drawing these from your Word, and I pray that you'd help us. And I pray that even a couple of points would be maybe the thing that someone needs to help them at this point in their life. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, let me say this. I know many of you are past the days of child rearing, but, you know, we have to preach the whole counsel of God. We get to preach the whole counsel of God. And, you know, and sometimes maybe one thing may not be applicable to one member, though it would to the other. But I do want to say this. It doesn't matter if your kids are grown, because I'm now officially in the Grandpa's Club, and I'm a grandparent. And let me tell you, it's not just a cliche, or it's not just a saying, well, you know, this applies to grandparents too. It does apply. You don't think I want my little granddaughter to love the Lord and serve the Lord, you know? I mean, they're wonderful, you know? I mean, it's just a neat thing. I got five sons, and we finally got a granddaughter, you know? And now the females are catching up to the males. You know, there were six boys, including me and Carla, you know? And now I've got a daughter-in-law and a daughter-in-law and a granddaughter. My wife was 6 to 4. They're catching up. They're going to take over, I'm afraid. And but anyway, you know, but as a grandparent, we, of course, want to help and be a blessing and influence our grandchildren anytime they're... And by the way, you can in a big way, because I remember my grandparents, and I remember my grandma, before I got saved, set me down in front of the TV years ago, had me to watch a Billy Graham crusade, years ago. And you know, and I'll tell you, you just don't know the letters and the impact of things that you send out and things that you do and how it will influence your children and your grandchildren. Well, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain. You're spinning your wheels that build it. Except the Lord, there it is again, emphasis, keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he giveth his beloved sleep. God says we worry, we fret, we sit up late, we get up early, we're twiddling our thumbs, we're nervous. Hey, go to bed, put it in my hands. You know, I mean, yes, you know, do everything, depend upon me, and pray. But then once you've done that, just trust me, God says. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, store children of the youth. Happy is a man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate. So God says we're blessed, that we're happy if we have our quiver full. Now, we have a quiver full, I think, because five. That's a pretty good amount of arrows, I think. But that's what the Lord's given us. Now, the Bible says as arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. So I'll tell you this. I am not a mighty archer, okay? I do hunt. And I've had a bow, and I hunt, but I'm really never had time to get good with it much. Now, my brother-in-law, Todd, I was preaching a revival in Wyoming 2 weeks ago, and it was deer season, and I didn't know it, and the preacher didn't know it. He didn't hunt, and he planned it, or else I could have maybe gotten a hunting trip and a revival, you know. But my brother-in-law flew out, and he was there at the same time, and he was hunting in Wyoming with his bow. And let me tell you, in Wyoming, to get a deer with a bow is a tough job, because just open plains, and, you know, you start off seeing them at 500 yards and 400, whatever. Well, he got about 75, 85 yards or something, but never did get one until it clicked over into gun season about 3 days later, and they got two nice bucks. But anyway, Todd is unbelievable with his bow. He really is. I mean, I shoot, you know, the big round target. If there's one, you know, I may hit somewhere in the round target. I mean, he's going to hit bullseye dead center every time. And so, you know, I'm kind of I don't like to say I'm a girly man in an area, but I really am when it comes to a bow. And also, I had a bow, but then I got tennis elbow. And in Indiana, where I live, southern Indiana, you could not hunt with a crossbow. But we had a doctor in the church, Mitch Campbell, that would write a medical release form that you could get a special permit to get a crossbow. And so that was what I was about to do. Then I moved to Arkansas, and you can use a crossbow. So I took the girly man way out, you know, with the crossbow. And I know how it is to live in Indiana, though, because we hunt with shotguns and, you know, and bows. And we looked at the Kentucky people with a rifle and say, oh, you guys, you take a win, you know, but really we covered the rifles, you know, and wish they'd change it. But you know, so kind of a weak way, but that's not as bad. You know, you say, well, Brother Reno, you're kind of handicapped hunting with that crossbow, you know, or whatever. Well, it's not as bad as the guy I heard in Arkansas. There was a guy up in a tree stand, and he was hunting, this buck came through or whatever, and he shot it when he got down. I mean, it had one eye. One eye was missing. So when he got down there, he looked, and it was the eye that was on the side of the where he shot him. So the poor deer was blind. I mean, it was blind. He took the blind deer, and then he had the audacity to hang it on his wall, you know. Or was that in Indiana? I'm sorry. And, yeah, your youth director slipped that story in on you. So, anyway, Brother Jerry was down there squirming. What? You know, man, I would have taken that poor deer. I would have picked it up, taken it to the veterinarian, said, man, I shouldn't have shot this. I want to have surgery. Do you have an eye I can put in it? You know, I mean, I would have felt sorry for that dog. And, he needed to go down. He couldn't see. He helped him out, you know. So, I just had to say that. But, no, seriously, but you know, if you're a mighty man, here's the thing: it's arrows. If you just take an arrow and just shoot it in the air, I mean, you're looking for danger. And if you don't point an arrow toward a target, guess what? You're not going to hit the target. And what I've found with children is, if you point them in the right direction, okay, basically, you may not hit the bullseye of what you think God's will is, but you know, you're going to get real close to what God's will is for your child's life. Now, here's the thing: notice it's not the arrow that does the job, but it is the archer. As arrows, that's the children, that's the teenagers, are in the hand of a mighty man. So God says, hey, don't be a girly man at this thing. Don't be weak. Have God's power, have God's might, and God's strength. Accept the Lord. If you don't get the Lord involved to help you to be that mighty man or woman, parent, to direct them and point them in the right direction, you probably won't hit the target. But if you do and continually seek that and make that your practice, then you can hit the target. Well, let me give you some practical things. How can we get our kids to turn out right? Number one, by promises. By promises. We just read a great promise right here. Accept the Lord, build the house. And that's what you really, that has been the forefront of my mind since kids came into my family, that the Lord has given us. Accept the Lord. Accept the Lord. You have got, no matter what you do, you've got to get the Lord involved in it. Train up a child in the way he should go. There's a promise. And when he is old, he will not depart from it. Some people say, well, Brother Reno, I teach my children, or I have taught my children. But the key is training. It's a continuous teaching. It's getting them to do right by reflex. It's over and over, continuous. I remember going to my son's house, Brian. And Brian's married, and, you know, he's in law school. And so he's busy, and And Katie, his wife, was kind of bored and they don't have any children, so she wanted a dog. So finally she persuaded him to get a little dog, a little house dog, you know, and one doesn't shed, and et cetera, you know. But they're pretty particular, you know, even being a young couple, they got some pretty nice furniture, and, you know, they were like, hey, Dad, use a coaster, you know. And, like, I told you that all your years, you know, I'm just getting you back. And, but anyway, they're real particular. Well, I come over and this crazy dog is jumping on their coffee table. I mean, there's scratches all over this new coffee table. I'm like, what about the coaster, you know? I mean, look at this. This dog's going nuts, you know, and he's jumping up on the couch and you know, and he's not supposed to shed, but he is a little bit, it looks like to me. And then, honestly, he's not house broke, and it's just a mess, you know, here and there. And but that's where you start off with a new pup, I guess. And but that's the first time I was there. And so, you know, I was like, man, I can't believe you guys, you know. And but, you know, great dog, whatever. And so I leave, and I come back through town. I'm flying to another meeting. I stop in Louisville, go over and spend a few nights. And when I get there, they, hey, Dad, watch this, watch this. Dog's name's Riley. Said, Riley, come here. Said, Riley, sit. What dog sit? Said, Riley, lay. He lay. Riley, play dead. Play dead. Riley, stand. You know, little snack, he stood. Riley, dance. I'm like, whoa, now that's a Baptist dog. He shouldn't be dancing, you know. But got it to dance. And then sure enough, while I was there, they have a little piece of yarn coming down with three bells on it. And when it has to go to the bathroom, it now goes over and grabs it and rings the bell. And it says, I want to go to the bathroom. And it worked. And I'm like, what in the world? It's all Dad. So while you were gone, you know, we took it to training school and obedience school. And, you know, and I'll be honest with you, that dog shocked me. I mean, the turnaround of the obedience of that dog was incredible. But also, I'm afraid many times we spend more time training our dog than we do our children. And that's really a scary thing. So we, by promises, we need to take those promises. I remember when my kids were little, Bible stories, man, we told them Bible stories all the time, and piles on the floor, piled up on the couch or whatever. Put my kids to bed every night with Pass the Pirate. I mean, I've got every Pass the Pirate tape that it was known to man. You know, let them, and I remember at night, you know, if you're familiar with Pass the Pirate or whatever, but Kidnapped on Island. They didn't like that one, so King Me First was real scary. They said, no, Dad, turn that one off, you know, and, but Pass the Pirate, and then Devotions later, as they got older around the table and that type thing all the way up through now. And I remember one thing we did, one time we took missionary cards. We got rid of the napkins in the napkin holder, and my wife would just put them out, you know, with the meal, but we put, just stacks of missionary cards in the napkin holder, and that way we rotate it one every time we prayed, at the meal, and on, things like that, but by promises. Then also, by the way, let me say this. Believe God for your kids. You need to believe God for your kids in good times, in bad times, and all the time, okay? Next thing, by prayer. Claim those promises too. Claim those prayer promises. Hey, you ought to pray each and every day for your children, for your grandchildren. You really should. Pray every day. And I can say, with the Lord as my witness, I can honestly stand here and say this, and now, you know, my oldest son's 26, so I cannot remember in 26 years a day going by that I have not prayed for my children and my family. Now, let me say this. You say, Brother Reno, has there ever been a day go by in your life that you've not read the Bible? I have to be honest. Yes. Okay, good. Sorry about that. You say, well, has there been people you missed on your prayer list? There have been. I have to confess. To be honest with you, yes, there are ones that I've missed. But you know, my family is at the top of my list. And I may get busy in a day and may not make it to the end for some reason. I have missed some of the people mid-range and at the end of my prayer list. It's on my daily list. But I'll tell you this, I don't miss my children. And I will give myself a loophole to say this, that sure, like, I remember I have visited people in the hospital as assistant pastor with kidney stones. And I'm like, oh my goodness, that sounds horrible. And then one day I got one. And it is horrible, I'll tell you. And as soon as I got there, I mean, I'm like, you got to help me. So they put me on morphine. So they're like, are you a busy man? Do you want this to pass, or you want to take it? I said, I've got camp starting 2 days from now. I got 400 teenagers coming in. Yeah, if you get rid of it, get rid of it. So surgically, they're going to remove it. So they hooked me up to this morphine pump. Well, my youth director, who works on staff, the guy that was my youth director as a teenager, works on staff at Shawnee, and he helped me in youth department. So he came up because it happened on Saturday. So I can't be there on Sunday. So they're coming up. You're going to have surgery on Sunday. And so he comes up and he goes, what can I do, Reno? What can I do to help you? Or whatever he said. I don't remember him being there. He said, all I kept doing was reaching up. There was a button. If you had more pain, you just kept squeezing his butt. He said, you just kept squeezing that button, you know. I think it gives you a legal limit or something like that. Or I may have overdosed. I don't know. But all I know was it was getting rid of the pain, you know. Now, that day, I can probably say, I don't think I prayed for him, okay? But other than something like that, I'm telling you, hey, by promises, but by prayer, hey, I'm telling you, it's an important thing to pray for your kids every day. Every day. And that's so important because prayer, we know how wonderful it is in the life of a Christian, but I mean, we need to, by prayer, go to God and ask God for their needs, hey, for their struggles, for the will of God in their life, who they're going to marry. I have three boys that are unmarried right now, and I'm praying for and have for years for their future mate, whoever that is. Lead it to them. Help it to be the right young lady and so forth. And now, I've got three names to associate with that. You know, Mark's a senior in college, and Tim is a sophomore, and Brandon's a senior in high school, and he just kind of got his eye on a little girl or whatever. Kind of young yet, but he'll be in college next year. And you know, so that's there. And boy, I mean, we need to pray for them that their marriages will go well and so forth, and they'll meet the right mate. But pray with them. Pray with them when they're younger, in the bed. Go to each one's bed and pray by their bed. Pray with them in bed. And then, of course, at devotions and so forth, too. Next thing is, let me say this, by potential. By potential. Now, potential is something that is possible that has not yet become reality. That's what potential is. So draw it out of them. Your kids have great potential. They really do. And so potential is something that's possible that's not yet become reality. For example, there was a parking lot over there, okay? And in that parking lot was nothing. Maybe a field, maybe woods. But you talked about a new building one day. And then you saw some blueprints to it one day. And then you thought, well, hey, that'd be great potential if we had this building. That's a possibility, but now it's a reality. So potential is something that's possible that has not yet become reality. And sometimes you don't see your life, the life of your children, like I don't, totally built. But let me say, it's in there. We just got to pull it out. And we pull it out, number one, by work. I mean, get them involved in work. You got to teach your kids to work. My boys growing up had a lawn business. That was a great thing for Christian kids because you can work around youth activities, you can work around church things, you got to work around rain days too, but lawn business is a great thing. And then when David graduated, they passed it down, it was Brian and Mark, and then Brian graduated, then it was Mark and Tim and et cetera. And that's a wonderful thing as a lawn business, to get them, it's hard work. Get them out there and teach them to work. And by the way, excuse me, most of my applications are going to be male or boys, and if you have girls to supply it through something else, but you see what I'm saying. But by work, and then not only just work physical work, but hey, work around the house. I mean, kids ought to have chores. They ought to have duties other than just cleaning the room, you know, and give them some responsibility. And then let me say this, in the ministry, if you're going to go in and clean the church, if you're going to go down and help with something, bring your kids along. Get them in there. Get them involved. Let them see what you're doing and let them be involved. They have a lot of youth. Get them involved in that. And then let me say this, you pull out the potential through competition. Competition is a good thing. It's good to compete, I think. We had a Christian school. In our Christian school, we had sports. We competed against each other, and sports is a wonderful way. My mom and dad divorced when I was 9 years old. One of the biggest things that helped me, I had no male influence in my life. I lived with my mom. My mom got two men across the street involved in my life who rode dirt bikes. Thus, I raced motocross for 7 years. And then also, she got me into Little League baseball and football and basketball. And I would tell you, that helps greatly, and especially in a Christian atmosphere and in the Christian realm. But you got to get them to compete. Competition's good. It's good for a kid to learn to win. It's good for a kid to learn to lose and to cry. It really is. I remember losing a championship football game. By the way, I'm a Packer fan, and I won't say forgive me for that. I'll say if you're not, I'll forgive you. But I'm a Packer fan, but the reason why is I played for the Packers for 5 years from 9 years old up, you know, and wore that outfit in Little League Packers. So I've always been a Packers fan, you know, but get in there and compete and so forth, and that's a wonderful thing. And I remember at Shawnee, we had a pretty large congregation, so we could have intramural sports. And we had a baseball team that we picked up, and we had four teams that we could make, so we had our own Little League. And we had a commissioner, his name was Andy Lyons. He would kind of take care of everything because he was head of the children's ministry, and four of us that were coaches would go in, we'd put all the names up on a board, we'd start picking them. Now, you could pick your son because of convenience of practice that you wouldn't have to, you know, he'd go to one practice and you got your practice, and so it was convenient. And we were down to where I had Brandon left at this time, but I coached for 14 years, and never lost a season in 14 years, to God be the glory. Seriously. But here's the thing. Our church, we love each other. We're in total fellowship all the years that I've been there and even to now. But you know, during that season, it was kind of like, hate Brother Reno because he's always won. You know, they're always pulling for the underdog instead of Brother Reno's team. It's kind of like when you got a Christian brother. I mean, like Steve Hobbins last tournament we were together, I was like, Steve, I love you. I said, but in about a minute, I'm going to hate you for an hour. But then I'll come and I'll love you again because we're going to play them in basketball, you know. I'm just going to hate you for an hour, but we'll love each other again, you know. And that's good. That's the way rivalries are. That's the way competition is. But they got to the point that they were frustrated because my team kept winning. So finally, it really got edgy. It really did. I mean, they would, you know, just really be upset when we'd score or we'd do something and we walk off and we weren't gloating it, you know, and that we were good. It was no brag. It was just fact, you know. So one time that it had gotten a little edgy. So I told Andy Lyons, I said, Andy, I'm going to do something here. I said, it's going to shock you. I said, but here's what I'm going to do. And I don't know if I got in the flesh or not, but I just thought, well, I'm going to do this, you know. I said, now look, I get Brandon. I said, Dave Snyder gets Daniel. We obviously all get our sons. I had one son left at that time. I said, but other than that, I said, here's the thing, Andy. I said, I'm picking every fat kid in the church. Every fat kid, every slow kid, every fat kid in the church is going to be on my team. So sure enough, we went through there and I started picking these kids. Little chubby kid here, little chubby kid here, you know. And some of the coaches were, because I was letting the athletes just pass by. And they were like, what is he doing? I never said a word. And I swore him. I said, I swear your secrecy. Andy, don't you ever tell anybody I did this. Don't you tell anybody. Because parents kill me probably, you know. So sure enough, I got these kids. Well, we played 7 games. I lost the first game. We lost big. Kids couldn't even run around the base. I'm telling you, I thought, what did I do? We lost the second game. Okay, we only played 7. We lost the third game, but not by much. Not by much, like a run or two. And then we won the fourth game, just by a little. Then we won the fifth game. Then we won the sixth game. Now it's 3-3, and then we won the seventh game. Now here's the thing. I had a philosophy. It's a simple one. It's called practice. Everybody else practice once a week. I'm running camp, and they're like, well, Brother Reno can't be practicing very much or whatever. But no, I got assistants, and I asked them, you take them to the batting cage on Monday, you take them to the batting cage on Wednesday, then you guys have an infield practice with them on this day, and then we showed up Saturday, and they thought I was practicing a half hour before Saturday. We was having 4 weeks, they were having 1 week. Well, practice makes perfect. That's what you do, you know. Like, hey, the other coaches, why aren't you all practicing, you know? Well, anyway, I remember, you know, things would kind of go around. Well, around that sixth game, after we won the fourth and fifth game, on the sixth game, a little ripple started going through. There was two big sets of bleachers out there, started going through the bleachers, and little waves of stuff. And then Andy was sitting right in the middle of them. And so the parents, well, that's Brother Reno. Look, there he goes again. So we're looking at Brother Reno. See, look who he thinks. He's got all the sluggers out there. He's got all those big kids that hit the ball way over the fence. Look at that. He always gets the best pick. He manipulates them somehow in that meeting. He always gets the best athletes. And Andy said he just lost it. He said it was going red up to here. He said, I couldn't take anymore, Brother Reno. So I just stood up and said, what are you all talking about? He said, I'm not Brother Reno's fan or whatever, but you always say he does this and whatever. He goes, look, in the meeting, he told me, I want all the fat kids. He goes, your fat kids are out there. Look at them all. And they started looking, and here they were. I saw Andy standing up going nuts on these people. But he lost it. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, when this game's over, I am dead. I didn't even want to walk off the field. I walked off the field and got out there, and actually they came up and shook my hands and thanked me, and then we won the seventh game and won the championship, you know. But you know what? Competition's good. And I remember before that, one coach brought up in the meeting, he said, well, look, this year I heard they do this in the YMCA. He said, I think we ought to just start telling the T-ballers and the Little League Baseball, when they ask about the score, we quit putting it up and we just say, well, it was a tie. And I said, you're crazy. I said, number one, I quit. I quit if you do that. Number two, you're just talking about it. Brother Manley, I know him. He ain't going to go for that. I said, there's no way. I said, you want to try to make it? I said, I'll tell you this, I quit. I said, because if you say that at the end of the game, if it's 9-7, it's a tie, guess what? It's not a tie. It's a lie. You just lie to those kids. It's not 7-7. It's 9-7. Put a lemon in the mouth, tell them to suck on it and cry and grow up. That's what you do. Now, that's my kid. My kid is lost. My kids have cried their eyes out in championships. But you know what? That's good. That pulls potential out. And then let me say this, schoolwork. Schoolwork. Hey, now that's where mom kicked in real big, and that's where they need to be a bit busy with their grades, and mom's helped tremendously with that. And then let me say by pattern. Understand that I came from a divorced home, and I didn't have a pattern to follow. My wife came from a very fine Christian home, and she did. So therefore, I had to look, I had to observe, I had to learn, I had to ask questions, I had to listen very intently, because I, you know, by the way, this thing of fatherhood and motherhood is new to all of us, but especially when you didn't have a pattern to follow. And I had to watch those things. And but we worked hard by the grace of God. My wife and I have worked hard by God and His grace to set an example of going to church, of having devotions, of not criticizing authority, of being totally involved in His work and admitting our mistakes to our children, and but setting a pattern for them to follow. And the Likens family before I got saved was pretty much known for money or materialism. They're just involved in the Louisville area, and Likens Lumber, Likens Watch, Likens Real Estate, Likens Driver School. But they're materialistic, and they're known for drinking. And they're known for definitely nothing Christian and not being in church, and especially for divorce. And, you know, that's a bad thing to be known for. Very worldly, very carnal-minded. And, you know, God saved me for a reason. And here's the thing. I'm the last L-I-K-I-N-S Likens boy, period, that was in Louisville or anywhere in our family. So if I didn't have any kids that were males to carry on the name, then it was done. Well, God gave me five. And I think it was that He let me, by the grace of God, see a change in the Likens name, and we changed that heritage. And by the way, I tell my boys, that's not by accident, boys. Hey, for 30-something years, I mean, you know, for 26 years with you guys, you know, we've worked hard to try to give you an example to say, hey, and I tell them, hey, let me tell you something. The name Christian is number one. Number one. But let me tell you, don't think that last name's not important. That last name is important. And you've been given a heritage now. And you've got to take that on and carry it on, because now you are Likens. And that's not a big deal other than the fact that we're saved. And let it be that we're known for example, my boys, all they know now is a Christian family, Christian education, and church. Can I tell you, I did not know Christian education, I did not know church, and I did not know what a Christian family was. That's all they know now. And praise God for it. But that's your job too. What my job was, that's your job. And we've got to continue on with that job. But not just by pattern. I'm going to be preaching here in a minute. I better slow down and teach. Okay. By praise. By praise. You ought to praise your kids. You really should. You ought to praise them. Praise them. Hey, if they have a play or a drama. And when I say that, award them too. Give them rewards. Take them out to eat. Go by Dairy Queen. Do something simple. And we used to, after every play, after every drama. When they make good grades, or after a game, or if they help, especially at church, praise them for it and reward them in the different areas. You know, our kids are so different. You know, every kid. I mean, all your children, I presume, are the same, unless they're twins or whatever, but even though probably twins are different. But David, you know, my oldest son, he's very physical. He's very physical, very strong, and always has been. And got a lot of zeal. He's a hard worker, but he gets attached real easily. And David is a Christian school teacher, an assistant principal, and a coach, an athletic director. Brian, my other son, loves the Lord, probably has Brother Jerry knows my son's, has probably the biggest heart of all the kids. Gives to missions, taught Sunday school, ran a teen band route while all the time going through pre-law after a year of Bible college, and now he's in law school at IUPUI, and not too far from here, and he's got about 3 more years to go there. Met with David Gibbs even this week. They've been talking back and forth. I don't know if he'll go that way with CLA or not. I really don't care. I just want him to do God's will. And so whether it's secular or whatever, he thinks it'll be more in the corporate field. But that's wonderful. He wants to give to the Lord's work. He wants to support missions. But Brian's got a soft heart. He really does. He loves people. He's very mentally strong. He's more mental and a lunatic, you know. But Brian, and then Mark. Mark's got a real soft heart, you know. And Mark is called to be a pastor or a youth director, a preacher. He's in a senior year. And man, he gives and gives and gives and gives. It's unbelievable. The other day, I was asking about a savings account, and there was about $3,000 lower than it should have been. And I'm like, Mark, you know, what have you done this summer? You know, what have you done? You know, because I remember where he was. And he's like, Dad, he goes, and he didn't want to talk about it. And finally, he said, Dad, he said, I just decided to try to give till it hurts to see what the Lord would do. Well, how can you complain about that? You know, I mean, he's given to the building program, given to this and that, and sacrificial offerings, you know, and that type thing. And while he's in college, and that's wonderful. And I remember David Bryan came to me one time about Mark. He said, Dad, we got a problem. I go, what? He said, come on, Dad, you had a notice. I said, what? He said, this is when he was like seventh grade. I said, Dad, he's 13. He's a seventh grader. I said, okay. He said, well, Dad, on the top of his Christmas list, he asked for 5 books and a set of art pencils. They go, we're a little worried about him, Dad. You know, I mean, he's seventh grade now. Come on. Top of his list, books and pencils. And I said, I go beat him up some more or something. I don't know. You know, go rough him up. Well, let me say this. They're not laughing now. You know why? My son David's not called to preach, but he has to speak in, he's 26, has to speak in Christian school chapel. Well, Mark, summer before last, he had no class in the summer at all. He stayed all summer. He up late at night. I go in, what are you doing? Studying Bible doctrines, you know. Now they're calling, hey, Mark, I need to ask you a question. You know, readers are leaders, you know. But the truth of the matter is, it's great, you know. And then Tim's very quiet, very shy, but he's probably the smoothest kid I got in coordination. Unbelievable motorcycle rider. Unbelievable. Motocross, skiing, snow skiing, whatever. Just a soft-hearted kid, you know. And then Brandon, you know, totally different. Brandon's 6'8". You know, all my boys are 6'6", 6'5". Brandon's the tallest, youngest, 6'8". Unbelievable basketball player. But he sets goals and achieves those goals, and just, he's real quiet. Out of all of them, he's quiet. He's laid back. You'd almost think that maybe he's not friendly, you know. That's just the way he is, you know. But aren't they so different? But, you know, what we got to do, we have to praise them and you know, comment to them and praise them on their areas of strength. If you're not careful, you ought to make every kid think that they're your favorite, though you should never have a favorite. But each one ought to think, you know, I'm dad's favorite. Another one, I'm dad's favorite. I'm mom's favorite. You ought to make everyone feel special in that area. And let me quickly say, because of time, I'm going to give you just three machine gun style, and these are the three I think a lot of people miss. Let me say this about people. The Bible says a threefold cord is not easily broken. And I'm going to tell you, you ought to welcome and you ought to want the influence of other people. You take one piece of rope, it's pretty strong. Wind two around it, it's real strong. You put three around it, I used to be a lineman, we'd have triplex we'd pull in, strong, triplex. I'm telling you, hey, a threefold cord is not easily broken. Don't try to do it all on your own, Mom. Don't try to do it all on your own dad. I don't care if you Christian school or homeschool. You can't do it on your own. You need other people to influence your life. There ought to be parents. There ought to be pastors. There ought to be youth directors. There ought to be Sunday school teachers. There ought to be coaches. There ought to be Christian school teachers. I'm telling you, you ought to welcome that help. Don't be offended if somebody else comes in and has an influence on your kid's life. I not only welcomed it, I wanted it. I recruited other people to help influence my kid. I really did. When my son David went through Crohn's disease, Jack Scott went through a little bit of the same thing, intestinal problems. David don't know to this day, privately asked him to write them. Steve Robinson had diabetes and had him to write because they went through some battles when my son did for a couple years. Recruit that help and recruit, by the way, when they hit bumps in the road, I knew people that maybe had similar bumps by being there so long, and ask them now that they're older adults to go out and influence them, but recruit other people. You know, even in the baseball, did you know I had an assistant coach? And here's the thing. Sometimes our kids, they say, as a parent, don't you want to be the number one influence? Well, sure, I like to influence them, and I'm glad they come to me. But I'm glad right across the hall with Brother Delaney, the principal, that they went in and talked to him. And to this day, I don't know what they talked to him about, but he was a man of God and loved the Lord. And I wasn't afraid about what he talked about. And I don't know to this day. That's a wonderful thing that they had someone else to go to. Sometimes kids don't be like totally to be told all the time by the parents. Especially in sport. Brandon was shortstop. I said, Brandon, you're not. And he's like, Dad, I'm trying to, you know. So what we did, my son was BJ, and Dave Snell's son was DJ. We got together, and I said, look, they react to us, you know, like, Dad, I'm trying my best, you know. I said, look, now I'm Dave. I'm going to tell you when Brandon needs to do something, and if you need to tell DJ, you tell me. So where he'd be like, Dad, I'm still on my name in front of the ball. I'd go up to DJ, or I'd go up to the assistant coach, and I'd say, hey, Dave, tell Brandon whatever. He'd say, Brandon, you're not. He goes, yes, sir, you know. And then I would tell his son the same thing, and it worked great, you know, recruiting other people. And then let me say not only by people, but let me say also by practice. Now, I'm going to duck on this one, Brother Jerry. I'm going to duck. I'm just about done. I'm out of here. Okay? But other than the Lord, I'll tell you the main reason my kids are probably serving the Lord right now. That's because I have a wife. It's a stay-home mom. Now, I know that's rough these days, but she is. And now I thank God for every lady that works. I had a secretary named Brenda, and I'm glad she was there. And I thank God for all the lady Christian school teachers. But here's what I want to say. My wife, especially in those young, forming, motable years, that's very important. Now, when they're ready to go to school and all the kids are leaving for school for 7 hours, then, you know, she started teaching piano in the school because nobody's home to teach anyway, you know, because we didn't homeschool. We went to Christian school. So that was us. But you've got to be careful, and in those young years especially, but let me say this, sir, if your wife is doing that and helping work outside because she has to, then you ought, when she comes home, you ought to jump in there and help vacuum and wash. I know it don't sound like a manly man thing, but it's the right thing. You ought to jump in there and help too. Why? So you can both have time to still influence your kids. Let me say this by practice. Take vacations. You ought to take vacation every year. I'm serious. You can't afford it. You can't afford not to. We went on one of the best vacations ever in Louisville, Kentucky. Where'd you live? All my life, Louisville, Kentucky. One of the best vacations we ever took. Why? We didn't have any road time. All we did was go places, just like that. But we wore Gatlinburg, Tennessee out, you know. And then we've been to, you know, once every 4 or 5 years, somewhere like Disney or whatever. But take vacations. Figure out a way to do it. I mean, pay it off later. I'm telling you, you'll never regret that you spent too much time with your family, I'll tell you that. And then only by practice, the final thing I want to say is this, by popular interest, and I'm done. You ought to take an interest in what your children are interested in. If we're not careful, we grow up and, you know, we become an adult parent. We become a big kid. You know, we go to the gym. We go learn. We go do what we want to do. And I mean, listen, some people, I hunt. I will hunt. Hopefully I'll make our 14-point buck running all around my house right now. I like to have it in my wall. I don't know if I'll get it or not. But here's the thing. I'll take 3 days to try to get it. I'll take a few evening hunts. But I don't want to wear myself out here. You know why? Well, that deer is not as important as my kids are. I personally think golf is a crazy game. I've never liked it. But I play now. Jerry knows, because he went with me one time. But I've gotten a little better since then. But here's the thing. I used to freaking go golf all year, but it's just the day, and I was looking not interested. Now I do. I'm like, yeah, I'll go. You know, I'm still horrible. Why do you do that? I'm too young, because it's been good. They can go golf. So you know what I do? I play golf now. Why? So when I get home, that way I can play golf. None of my sons really ever took money up. They just didn't. And so I give a lot to it. Why? Because I take an interest in what they're interested in. Now, I learned what they're interested in together. For example, I raised four golf for 7 years. I bought my boys from 50 when they were 6 years old. And they went 80, 100, 125. We all love that river like this. We all love swimming together. I started throwing in weights at 5 and 6 years old. At Rough River. And no land. So they've grown up swimming. We love to swim. There's a lot of things we do together because we started off doing it together. But there's something about what we say this. Those kind of sound like man things. My kid was into computers. My kid was into trumpet or instrument or whatever. I would have interest in that. There was a man on my team banner. I was told him this. He was on my team banner. His kids were on my team banner. And he said, really good. You got to help my son. He goes, both of your arms are pretty strong. He goes, man, he goes, you know, I just can't influence you. You won't listen to me if you're double. And you know, are you really want to help Robert? But they didn't join our church and start coming. And I went, and I said, you really want to help? He's like, yeah. I said, all right, you want me to be kind of honest, or you want me to be brutally honest? He goes, no, help me. I said, okay. Number one, your son's had 5 football games, public school, Parkville General. I've been to 3 out of 5. I had trouble getting all my kids in. But I've been to 3 out of 5 of your son's football games. He's number one off state. He's called over the PA 35 times a month. I said, I haven't seen you in the bleachers one time. That's a big part of your problem right there. I said, the other day when I came over to the house, knocked on the door, because he knows I'm there, and you know about football, I said, what do we know? Today you know, so well, this time, I said, if you wanted to enter, and by the way, I'm not a NASCAR, don't get mad at me. He had to put a NASCAR, he could go home, he's got a NASCAR hat, he comes in there and he puts, and he interrupts the conversation. He's trying to communicate with me. He's like, you know, football. He goes, why do they want it? You don't want that football game to turn to about halftime, about halfway through, because then NASCAR comes on, we're going to turn it off at halftime, we'll watch the NASCAR. I said, you know what you should have done? You should have sat down, you got the first part of your NASCAR race. The best part of the NASCAR race is the last one anyway. But anyway, sit down and watch the full football game with your son, because he's interested in it. You want to know why you're losing? Because you're not interested in what he's interested in. He's going to be gone one day. He'll go do what you want to do. Then, you know, go hunt for 20 hours. Go hunt. Go run the NASCAR, whatever. But you've got to take an interest in what your kids, because one day you're going to want them to be interested in stuff, and you're going to be like, what happened? You've got to take an interest in what your kids are interested in.